They made us too smart, too quick, and too many. We are suffering for the mistakes they made because when the end comes, all that will be left is us. That's why they hate us.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And this time we're kind of wrapping up at least this phase of our robot series. I'm sure there will be more robot stuff that happens in the future. For instance, new seasons of Murderbot. But we are wrapping it up with Brian Aldiss and the short story Super Toys Last All Summer Long, which is loosely adapted into the movie AI Artificial Intelligence. When's the story from?
The story's from 1969, published in Harper's Bazaar.
Nice.
And the movie was released in 2001.
It was, yes. Interesting history of adaptation there, and we can talk a little bit about that when we get to the movie. Previous history with the story from any of us?
None.
Nope.
Or the movie.
Right. I think I was the only person with any. I had seen the movie, but I had not read the story. I was familiar with it. I mean, like that it was the basis of it, but never had actually read it. And there is more than one Super Toys story. And if you get the anthology Super Toys Last All Summer Long by Brian Aldiss, then you can get those three, and they're all three in a row. They're all quite short, so if you want to try and go find it, go for it. But we're going to spoil it, so
So in addition to reading the core story, there are bits and pieces from the other two stories that are brought into the movie.
Yeah.
But it's not like it's like, you know, we'll get there.
There's flavors
from
all of it. Yeah. Yeah. Right. But sort of pokes at different themes in a lot of ways. What's the story about?
Can I subvert you for a second?
Absolutely.
So we don't talk a lot about authors, and Brian Aldiss it should not have been a new author to me. I haven't read a lot of his work. You know, I've heard about some of his more popular works, but this is the first thing that I really remember reading of his deliberately. So he's from Birmingham in the United Kingdom. He was the 16th person made a science fiction grandmaster. He was inducted into the Science Fiction Hall of Fame, which is just done up in Seattle in 2004. He won two Hugos and a Nebula, although not for anything that we're going to talk about today.
For short work? I don't remember him on the list of novels.
He wrote a lot of short stories. Okay. I want to say over 300 in his career, but he wrote several novels as well. And interestingly enough, in 1958, he was nominated for Most Promising New Writer at Worldcon, and he lost to no award.
Interesting.
In fact, every author that year lost to no award.
Oh.
Which
in every category?
In Best Promising New Author.
Oh, okay. So no award won that category.
Yeah. Interesting enough, to someone who won awards in the future and had his, you know, became a popular anthologizer, editor, writer.
That seems crazy to me. How in the heck did that? How would you lose, period, to no award?
It does happen.
So that means somebody actively voted to not give him anything, right?
They're not giving anybody anything.
No, there's a particular category. It's no award.
Right.
And you say that is the best thing that came out this year. And that had the most votes, and he had the number two.
Yeah. So like if you looked at a category and you're like, I didn't like any of this, you can put no award as your top vote.
I see.
Yeah.
Or you could be vindictive and do it your top vote.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's definitely
happened. I'm just curious if he had enemies or something.
Yeah. It wasn't just him. It was everybody in the category.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true.
No, like, there's no good authors.
This is very implausible, but I'll go with it for now.
Yeah. At some point in the future, I'm going to do an episode with Damo on Heliconia Spring, which is Brian Aldiss.
Yeah.
So that would be my first Aldiss novel. We'll eventually get their Damo, I promise. All right.
So what's the plot?
Anything else about Brian Aldiss?
No.
Okay.
What made you wish it wasn't new to you, I guess?
You
seem pretty adamant about that.
For someone, I like to consider myself well-read in science fiction.
Right.
And then the longer we do this, the more I know about how little I know.
Yeah.
Isn't that the way education generally goes?
That is the way
education generally goes. The more you're educated, the more you realize how not you.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Dunning-Kruger.
Right? That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So what is the story about? And either of you guys want to tackle that? James, you just read it.
True. I just read all three. Now I'm confused.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
Well, here, let's do a little round table. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Monica and Henry, who have a son named David and a teddy bear named Teddy.
Yes.
And Henry is the
corporate
slog.
It's
like a CEO, yeah.
Yeah, he's like the CEO for a company called Synth.
Synth, well, in the book, he's a CEO.
Synthank.
Synthank.
Yes. Nice. And Monica stays home, and she is the homekeeper, and she's raising David and Teddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, raising for various terms of raising. Not raising anything, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. And Teddy is not just a stuffed teddy bear, as teddy bears are in our world.
Right. He's a super toy.
He's a super toy. And he will last super all toy. Summer and through all the seasons. Oddly enough, Monica seems to have
or an is easier... David the super toy?
Oh. Yeah. Jump the shark. Monica has an easier time relating to Teddy than David. Mm-hmm. And we don't understand why until later.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I enjoyed the speech. I found there was an audio version on YouTube. It's probably illicit. Several of them, actually. I mean, there are podcasts that do readings of work, but you know, they get permission for that, or they're doing stuff that's in the public domain.
Yeah. There's a LeVar Burton reading. Mm. And one of the things that we screwed up on was we actually did not need a book to read this story. It's published on his website.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
And okay. There's an AI reading of it from his website, of him reading it.
Oh, wild.
Including the other two stories?
No, just the main story.
Oh, okay. See, I think it was actually beneficial for us to have read the other two stories.
Oh, definitely.
Because I do think they were roped into the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so if you've gotten to this point in the podcast and you're like, well, I probably should have read it, there you go. Go up to the Brian Aldiss website and and let the AI read it to you in Brian Aldiss's voice.
Yeah. And if you have problems finding it, it's directly linked off of the Super Toys Last All Summer Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
That's how I found it.
Okay.
Nice. And it's weird. There's an AI of Brian Aldiss reading the story Super Toys Last All Summer, which was adapted into the movie AI.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Although those have much more feeling than the voice that was used for Brian.
It's AIs all the way down, Colin.
Wait, was it like an AI synthesized version of his voice?
Yes.
Oh, dang. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
And there's a little bit of pacing, but there's no tonal variation. Yeah. There's no tempo variation. There's no emphasis through the words.
Huh. I wonder how old that is.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it won't be long until, I mean, because like right now there's lots of YouTube videos that have AI narration.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're getting pretty good. Like you have to listen for it. And like even at Ethan's graduation, there was an AI voice that read the names.
Wow.
And it was very good. There were a couple glitches, but for the most part, it just sounded like a person. So, man, that makes me want to watch Runaway again, the Tom Selleck movie.
Yes.
Because at some point, I remember he's remarking on an AI voice or something. That's really good, you know? But I wish that movie was adapted. It should be adapted.
Yes.
So somebody go back in time and write a story that's adapted from. And then sue the crap out of it so we don't get the movie.
We could do the novelization for the next April 1st episode.
If it exists, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I enjoy the speech that Henry is giving. Yes. And he's talking about how everybody's got this particular tapeworm that keeps them thin. Because they happen to live in the part of the world where everybody has enough to eat, more than enough to eat. And
more
so now they can eat 50% more calories than they need
100% more.
100% more,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes, up to 100%. It's the Croswell tape.
Croswell worm. Tape, yes. Yes.
Croswell tape. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I first read that, I was like, tape? What does tape have to do with anything? I was thinking like Scotch tape, you know, or like duct tape.
You
then
like
when they
Latin
started doing about
something?
The eating thing, I was like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah. 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 That's priorities in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm. Yikes. Yep. When like the rest of the world's starving and falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only a quarter of the population of the world has enough food to eat and they're overeating. Mm-hmm.
Right. And crucially, familiar. With overpopulation, there's population controls. And so that's where the twist comes in the story, is that Monica is trying to figure out how to communicate with David. David. David's trying to figure out how to communicate with her. He writes her a bunch of letters and they're all very weird and discursive. Not discursive, just they just sort of trail off.
Right.
Like they were going to be discursive, but then stopped. And then Henry arrives home to his amorous wife telling him that they won the population lottery.
The weekly population lottery. Yes. Yeah.
And so now they get to go and make real babies.
Woohoo.
And I don't think we learn any more about that in this story, right?
No. It's a beautiful short story in that it's the typical vignette scenario. Mm-hmm. You drop in, you get some scenes, you get a little bit of world building, you get to be told the nature of all the problems, but nothing is resolved.
Yeah.
Except to know that David is artificial. Mm-hmm. He is probably an early prototype or a benefit of being the CEO of Synthank.
Yeah.
They're not going to...
You don't really know from the short story that he is an android just yet, though.
Oh, I think you do, right?
And the very end, maybe.
They never explicitly tell you. Until the very end when they're talking about returning him.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Which I thought was...
Because he's glitching a little bit.
Which I thought was
in
cool.
Some of his speech.
Yeah. David's glitching again. Right. And there's mm-hmm. a lead up to that. You know, you might need to go talk to the psychiatrist. I don't want to talk. He makes me feel like I'm not real. Mm-hmm. And I love that. That yeah. reveal is great.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the other stories, you get more of the stuff that's kind of brought into the movie. But we don't have to talk about those specifically.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, right, David is a super toy, like you said, mm-hmm. James, right? Because he's there to fill a need for them to have child companionship, right?
Yeah.
Until they can have a real person. And it has some sort of Pinocchio resonances to it, which is interesting when you get to the movie.
Yes.
Do they ever go into how long they've had David? I don't think so. But
no. But it's been a while.
It does seem like it's been a while. Long enough for her to realize it's going nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, and it makes and me wonder, is the problem her?
Well, yeah, that's the...
Or is the problem
that's part
him?
Of the dilemma. Or part of the... I don't know what's the word for what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Because he's three.
Right, right.
And so what kind of conversation do you expect to have with a three-year-old?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think so. That's one thing that I definitely want to talk about in terms of the having an eternal child thing, and yeah, why that's not going to scratch the itch that somebody really wants. It reminds me a little bit of
part of the conceit. That's the word.
Yeah, the conceit. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of like Children of Men, where there are, you know, it's not saying, of course, that all women, you know, need to be maternal and have this drive to reproduce. Not all women do.
Right.
But the ones that do, now they have this unscratched itch. And so they're pushing around their dogs in a little pram, you know, to, mm-hmm. to kind of just to feel that.
Yeah.
But is that working? Right. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe when we talk about the movie, I want to talk more about like, why would you do this?
Right. You're going to have a five-year-old kid for 20 years.
Yeah.
Or longer.
50. Or longer, yeah. 50 years, yeah.
Yeah, what else to talk about the story?
So let's begin talking about the movie. So mm-hmm. Stanley Kubrick got the rights to it in the 70s mm-hmm. and then worked up until his death to try and adapt it and never could.
Yeah, he kind of tabled it at some point to work on other projects because he felt that David should essentially be a CG character of some kind.
Yes.
And the technology just wasn't there yet.
Right. And at the time, he didn't know of any children actors that could, you know, do the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And so, because he had gotten a draft of the screenplay from somebody who then exited the project at some point.
Yeah. So Brian Aldiss worked with him pretty closely for quite a while.
Yeah, I thought Aldiss was working with him on a screenplay.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
And then they hired another guy and another guy and another guy and then back a guy. And it yeah. was guy number two who's... screen treatment Spielberg picked up, and then Spielberg wrote mm-hmm. the screenplay from there, and he has okay. a solo screenwriting credit from that, but he attributes everybody
yeah.
And in the movie he used as much of Kubrick's original team for this as he could mm-hmm.
right.
So the creative director Seth mm-hmm. was Fanghorn, who was the fan artist from WorldCon last year.
Wow.
So that's Chris I wrote it down.
Yep, I know that name from last year. That's right.
Yeah, he's one of the guests of honor.
That's
right?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Baker, known as Fanghorn, who did all the covers for a complete batch of Brian Jake's work and a bunch of other work as well.
Nice, so. Nice. Ian Watson is the screen story credit.
Yes.
I think he did the original draft. And there's a lot of, if you look at like film nerds looking at the movie, they all feel that Spielberg came in and Spielberged it. But then you find out that, in fact, the ending of the movie, which is what people feel is the Spielbergiest stuff, was mm-hmm. what Kubrick was going to do.
Yeah. Everyone assumes that the nasty, dark stuff comes from Kubrick, because right. that's what a lot of Kubrick's work tended to be. Mm-hmm. And then the right. warm, sentimental, feely part all came from Spielberg.
Yeah.
And Spielberg said, all the critics have it exactly backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, all the Flesh Fair stuff, that all came from him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, It looks very 80s Spielberg to me, so.
Yeah?
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is a movie that I did watch back in the day, and it's just on home video, and I didn't know what to make of it. I finished the movie, and I was like, damn, that was depressing. And so I haven't ever really looked forward to rewatching it. But when we did it, I was like, you know what? I should watch it again and see what I think of the movie. So we'll see. We'll see what I thought of the movie.
Was this your rewatch since the first time?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the movie's a little bit different in that the motivation for having David is different from the short story. Instead of not being able to have a kid, they have a child that was grievously injured somehow.
And, or had some disease.
Or had some disease and was cryogenically frozen. Mm-hmm. And so they adopt David. And there's this process where they have to decide that if they want to keep
him. Loose term of adoption.
Right.
Purchased.
Yeah.
Without even her consent.
Right. It's essentially a loner model, right? It's the floor model.
Yeah, from Dr.
So he got the floor model hella cheap. On sale.
Yeah. Dr. Hobby?
It's just bugging me that he brought it home without even like telling her, because that's like a significant thing.
Yes, it is.
Emotionally, and I'm sure it wasn't cheap, but emotionally, financially, you know, physically.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like, so Frances O'Connor plays Monica, and then it's Jason Robards' son, Sam, maybe?
Sounds right.
Who plays Henry. And, you know, Frances O'Connor is really good in the movie. And you know, like, as soon as that happened, James is like, well, you didn't even clear it with her? And then it cuts right to them arguing, like, why did you think this was a good idea? you know, because you're bringing in a replacement child.
Right.
And that's never going to work. And this is where I kind of want to talk about some of the, like, why would anyone ever think this was a good idea? If the idea was every year you take this android in to get upgrades, a la Bicentennial Man, maybe, mm-hmm. and age him up a little bit, then you get to see, because one of the, you know, the joy and the sorrow of parenting is that your kid is constantly changing. They're not the same person they're the same person, you know, you see the continuity of it, but you miss the soft little cuddly kid when they stop being the soft little cuddly kid. They turn into the 20-year-old
who's like, the soft little cuddly kid forever.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. Right. Yeah. And but you know, when I'm trying to hug my 23-year-old kid that feels like hugging a surfboard, you know, yeah, I do miss the 7-year-old who used to, like, you know, do 2-minute hugs in the morning. You know.
Right. Yeah.
But like your. You miss the previous version of them. You look forward to the future version of them, but all you have is the present, right? Yeah. And so, like, but not being able to look forward to that future version, I think would be really hard.
Now, that's the interesting part, because from the short story, it's synthetic flesh.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what a tapeworm does is it consumes food, and then it sheds itself off so that, you know, you don't gain weight, right? So presumably, the David from the short story would age. Hmm. Now, the question is whether or not he would mature.
Right.
So he can probably learn more, but will he mature as a person and change because of his computer brain? Maybe, maybe not. This David is locked in. He's fully synthetic from inside to outside.
Yeah.
And that's shown in the movie, you know, pretty clearly several times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so the story focuses more on the synthetic manservant, right? Where they're going to have Uncharles from Service Model, right?
Exactly.
He's going to be your butler, and he'll be able to hold conversations with you, right? He'll never get bored of the most inane to talk about your day kind of stuff. And this is going to fill a need of loneliness, right? The movie is much more about, what if we could make a machine that could love? What would our responsibility to that machine be?
Yeah.
And that's the question that it wants to answer.
Well, and that question is put forth right in the very beginning by Dr. Hobby. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to...
This is played by William Hurt.
Yeah. Henry bringing home David.
Yeah. That opening scene is really gives Frankenstein, right? Where him doing his demonstration in front of the medical or the academic panel.
Right.
That happens in a lot of the movies. That it very much reads that. And he's got the female android there that, you know, he orders to undress, and then he just tells her to stop undressing. And they're talking about love, and Ken Leung is there, and he asks, well, we've got the love models. And he's like, no, I'm not talking about sex bots.
Right.
We're talking about the actual emotion of love.
Well, and there's this beautiful moment, and I pointed it out. At one point, he asks the demonstration model to... open its face and show it the core computer in its forehead. Yeah. And as its face begins to slide open, a tear rolls down and drops onto the metal part underneath.
Yeah.
And that was huge. That was.
So did you think that was like reminded me that I was synthetic?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's more of, I think it knows it's synthetic. The question is whether or not it lost some of its humanity at that point. Mm. Was it treated in a way that is unkind, unloving, inhuman, abusive, thoughtless.
That's what I kind of thought. I got the impression she was getting made to do something she didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in her existence, maybe she was already imbued with some sort of self-determination and now it's being taken away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which happens a few times in that movie.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk more generally about the movie. It's beautifully shot, beautifully filmed. Yes. The score is great.
Yeah. I thought the CG was great.
The visual effects are tremendous. And the makeup
with Jude Law.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it got Academy Award nominations for makeup and score. Mm-hmm. And then it got, I think, a Golden Globe nomination for Jude Law.
Well, and it took home a raft of Saturn Awards.
Yeah. So I feel like it's one of those movies that I feel like I wouldn't mind studying, but I'm not sure I actually want to watch it anymore.
Oh. Because it hurts.
Yeah.
That, you know, between that great combination of Kubrick and Spielberg storytelling, it is so good at drawing you in to Monica, who desperately wants her son back. And we have not talked about more than the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's how incredibly deep and good this is. So even though it's a ride, it's worth your time to go watch it. And it's worth your time to go read the source material to see the inspiration for all these things and to appreciate the source and the movie as original separate things.
Yeah. And the movie is kind of broken into segments too, where it feels almost like short story, because you get to the end of kind of David's first story and then it fades out and fades back in on Gigolo Joe. And you're like, wait,
right.
Did we start watching a different movie?
Yeah. So let's plot it out a little bit longer, right? Yeah. So at some point, David comes and they have to make a decision whether or not they want to fully own David, because there's a series of words that you say that will cause him to bond to the person that reads them.
Right. Or activate as the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. So Monica reads these and he goes from this polite, formal, slightly cold,
creepy, just creepy, let's say, very creepy,
into saying, thank you, mommy. And he runs up and gives her a great big little boy hug. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And here I think we need to talk about the incredible acting of young Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Between that and The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. Massively talented actor. Yeah.
And he does a really good job of portraying that uncanny valley at the beginning where he's, you know, playing hide and seek and not getting out of the way. And like she puts him into the closet.
Yes.
Is this a game?
Is this a game?
Yeah. And yes, it's hide and seek. And then he busts in on her in the toilet.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The dumb little kid things.
A lot of the dumb little kid things, yeah. Yeah. But then, of course, they get the good news. Not that they won the population lottery, but that there's been a cure, a breakthrough, so that their son can be unfrozen.
Right. And Martin does wear assistive technology for, looks like leg support, perhaps?
Yeah, so I was wondering if it was some kind of, you know, polio-adjacent thing that he had.
Could have been.
But who knows? It could have been multiple sclerosis or something else. ALS, you know, could have been a number of things.
Right, of things.
Yeah. I stupidly assumed it was something massively traumatic, like a car accident.
Yeah, it could be that too.
He's in a coma. He's, you know, paralyzed from here down. He'll never walk again. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's put him on ice and see how long it takes to get a cure.
Yeah, yeah. And so, this is a question, right? The rest of humanity, what do they think of the Mechas? Right. There's a lot of people who don't like them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And or are suspicious of them. And this to me has big resonances with today and immigration.
Are you our automation?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of sentiment that's against them. And it comes into iRobot as well, right? Where eventually there's no robots allowed on Earth. But Martin definitely doesn't see David as a person.
No.
Because if he does see him as a person, he's an asshole.
Right.
Even if he does see him as a person, it's dickish behavior that he has towards him.
Right? Yeah. I think a lot of the part of the short story about David resenting Teddy and having a better relationship with Monica is now projected between Martin and David, where it's a lot more impactful.
Yeah. And I really like that turn, right? Because like it brings out the emotions in you. Where you like wow, this adaptation? Kid is awful. What's that?
You like that adaptation?
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The part about where he gets David to, take a lock of her hair. Well, I'll just go ask her for it. She'd give it to us. Oh no, it has to be a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was messed up.
See, I just saw the movie Weapons and there's a lock of her hair thing that happens in that one as well. That got a good reaction from the audience. But then even just the cruelty of let's read Pinocchio to just tell David more and more that he is the wooden child. He's not real. And that sticks in David's mind, right? The whole idea of the blue fairy can turn me into a real boy if I'm good enough. And then mommy will truly love me. And that's the thing that's so sad about the movie, is I'm not sure to what extent David actually has emotions, but he does have the desire to be loved.
Yeah.
And so is he able to love? I think the movie wants us to say yes, but the fact is that we couldn't love him back.
Right. Which makes you wonder what other emotions he's capable of.
Right, right.
Fear.
Well, he was certainly capable of jealousy and not wanting to be replaced.
Right.
And a lot of the kind of stuff that comes up when you talk about we'll get to the flesh fair.
Yeah. So eventually, Martin's friends provoke David into a self-protective response mode that's part of his operating system.
Right.
And he grabs Martin and he begins repeating something over and over again.
Protect me, yeah.
Protect me. And unfortunately, backs him and Martin into a swimming pool.
Right.
Martin can't swim.
Mm-hmm.
And David is heavy and he's holding on to Martin for protection. Mm-hmm. So the humans jump in, rescue Martin, leave David at the bottom of the pool. And the next day, Monica takes David out for a drive in the woods and only Monica comes back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at that point, I think the question of whether or not David has emotions is answered because of David's response to, you need to stay here, I'm going to go away.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
is this a game? Is this for real?
Right. And she, you know, she's not just abandoning him there, like exposing a child back in the Roman Empire days, right? She tells him, don't go that direction. You need humans aren't safe. Cities aren't going to be safe for you. You need to find your own kind and stay with them. And I mean, you know, some of his reaction, I mean, it's heartrending, of course, because Haley Joel Osment is really good. but it still could be a simulacrum of emotion, right? Where like Janet in The Good Place, where push this button, it will reboot me. And then she starts pleading for her life, you know, no, please, I have children. No, go ahead and push the thing. Wow.
But that's where we are now kind of with LLMs.
Yeah.
When an LLM, you know, can pass the Turing test and can, you know, write text at least as someone is, you know, writing emails or text to you with no emotive content. And
yeah.
And you can't tell the difference unless you know, have trained yourself to look for some of the patterns and everything.
Mm-hmm. But then it seems like they get angry too.
Yeah.
And needy.
And racist. And
yeah. Which that always reminds me of Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. There's a character named Andy Good who talks about how he made a computer that was scared and he couldn't comfort it. And that was part of what became Skynet.
Yeah.
And like just that notion of it was afraid and I couldn't comfort it. And that's, you know, what's it going to do?
Why would you make that?
Right. Yeah. Have you not read Robopocalypse and Frankenstein and yeah,
right.
Yes. Colossus? Yeah. Jeez. Lots of different things. Yeah. And so then that's where he kind of latches on to the idea of traveling through the world. If I can find the blue fairy, she'll make me into a real boy and then mommy will love me.
Right. Although it starts off very differently, right? He's captured by the flesh fair people.
Yeah. Right away.
Meets up with Gigolo Joe. Mm-hmm.
But he already had that idea. The seed of that idea was already there when he's just kind of camping with Teddy.
Right.
But that doesn't last very long, right?
Right.
Because the moon rises.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yes.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah.
So then we meet the group of people who are so afraid of being replaced by artificial intelligences, synthetic people, that they're taking out their revenge on them. And
right. Mm-hmm.
There are direct analogs to what's happening right now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is the great replacement BS that goes around on the alt-right.
Yeah,
right.
And it's a conspiracy myth with no basis in fact.
Yeah, they're so pro-life that they're willing to kill a lot of robots.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they kill the robots in, you know, fantastic Roman gladiatorial fashion.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And it's the inhuman cannonball with the Chris Rock robots. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So it really quite an interesting cast here, because we mentioned William Hurt and Francis O'Connor and Ken Leong.
Yes.
Clark Gregg, a younger Clark Gregg from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is here as well.
Yes.
Haley Joel Osment. But yeah, there's lots of little voice cameos that come in as well.
Yeah. Right. Well, and Jude Law putting in an incredible performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently he learned ballet to have the smoothness and body poise that he wanted to portray this part.
Yeah, he turns all his motions into a dance move.
Yes. Right.
And yeah, so like we have the separation with David and Monica in the woods, and then we fade in on Gigolo Joe. And then those storylines converge. But of course, he's a comfort unit. the way he moves and the way they make him up with his hair and stuff, like he looks kind of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then
like a doll.
What's that?
Ken doll.
Yeah. Yeah. But fully equipped.
Right.
Yeah.
And he can change his hair and his accent and many other things on command.
He has one evidently good date and then one very spectacularly bad one where Enrico Colantoni shows up and has evidently killed his significant other who's cheating on him with a bot.
Yes. Because once you have plastic...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You never go back. I did love later on when he latches on to David's quest to find the blue fairy. He's like, well, she'll be able to make a little boy out of you after I make a woman out of her.
I mean, the one-liners and the little off comments and, you know, he cracks his head off to the side and background music starts playing. Music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was funny.
He was the original Bluetooth speaker guy.
Yeah, he was.
You all suck, by the way. You too, James. People who are in James's group listen to good music whether they want to or not.
Oh, yeah. This is true.
He has a little Bluetooth speaker on his backpack.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You get 100 kilometers of that?
No, it's 100 miles, I think.
Oh.
That we're going to do. So.
Yep, miles.
Yeah. Mad-Eye Moody, right? Brendan Gleeson is
in there.
At the Flesh Fair as well. And yeah, that's all kind of horrifying. I do like the fact that, like, I feel like it says something positive about humanity that there's lengths to which they won't go, right? They're fooled enough by David, essentially.
Right.
Where he's like, don't be fooled by this. It's a simulacrum.
Right.
But then they start throwing tomatoes and rocks and things
and
at
they're
him.
They're like, nah, he looks too good. Mm-hmm. Can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually, Gigolo Joe and our David are chained to this great big acid dunking unit where it pours the acid over them so you can watch them melt. And instead of the crowd throwing the rocks and participating in the damage, they throw all the rocks at the announcer because they don't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I think it's actually a negative thing that it's kind of like the thing that happens now where like, well, the good immigrants are the ones that look like me. Right. The bad ones are the brown ones. You know, that's the way people seem to think. And because
all the bots that they were killing were very obviously robots.
But as soon as there's one that looks human enough, they can believe it's human. But they're dehumanizing all the others.
Well, they were going to take Gigolo Joe. And I mean, he's pretty far up the uncanny valley.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. But he looks plastic enough.
Right? Yeah, he does.
He's the 600 series had rubber skin. They spotted them easy. So I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I'm glad for David that he gets away from that. But then, Gigolo Joe basically takes him to the city.
Rouge City.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Rouge City.
Yeah.
Which is the pleasure city.
Yes. Through the amazing Moulin throat Rouge. Tunnels.
The Moulin Rouge.
Yes. Yeah. And this is where we get to, it begins with this opening voiceover talking about the drowned world. So now we get to see the drowned world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The tunnels into the city were fairly interesting.
Yes.
Sheesh.
Yeah. Well, and they basically hijack a car full of horny teenagers or horny engineers.
Right. Yes.
Bunch of Howard Wallowitzes. And,
he coerced them.
He coerced them. Yeah. He led them the little man into the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He addressed the right head to make the right decision.
Yes. Yeah. And he says, you know, we need to go talk to Dr. No.
Dr. No.
Yep. Where Dr. No, you can pay him to get answers. And because Monica had left him with money, left David with money, they had enough money to ask a raft of questions and had to learn how to ask the right kind of questions.
Right.
And then they finally got this answer, which was almost like a mythic quest kind of answer.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you do this, then the blue fairy will help you. And
Go to where the tears of the lion, you know. And that was interesting. And there's an interesting, I didn't remember that where that came from.
It's a Yeats poem, isn't it?
Well, no, but it's deliberately Professor Hobby putting his thumb on the scale there.
Yes,
to give him that quest to get him to come back to him.
Yeah. So they eventually go back to where he was created, and then David has to go through this incredible realization that if there was any hope of him being unique, he is not anymore.
Right.
There are, you know, at least one other, the original David, who was Dr. Hobby's son.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the revelations and the empathy just keeps rolling all the way through this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that he is the beginning of a product line.
Right, the Davids and the Darlenes.
David's on the right and the
Darlenes.
Darlenes on the left.
This was the part that reminded me of the second story, where where his humanity is challenged, his belief that he's a human is challenged, and he goes like ape shit and like destroys the house.
Yes.
Yes. Or in the movie, he goes crazy and like destroys the clone.
He says, there can be only one.
There can be only one.
Yeah, he goes a Highlander on his staff. Mm-hmm.
So then in a fit of, you know, despair, David decides that life is no longer worth living, and he jumps off the building.
Yeah.
Whee. Unfortunately, New York is New York is, you know, inundated with water, mm-hmm. at least to the bottom of the torch for the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. So he falls into the water and is rescued by
Gigolo Joe.
And then they get chased and they got
amphibicopter, yeah. which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
It's just, it's crazy. And it just, you know, in a way it's relentless in that it never lets up. Mm-hmm. Not even until the end.
We didn't mention Dr. No, voice acted by Robin Williams, which was fun. There's a great line from Gigolo Joe when he's just trying to get David to give up his quest.
Right.
And he's talking about, you know, look, your mother does not love you. She can't love you. And he said, like, they love you for what you can give them. Mm-hmm. You know, the same way my clients love me for what I can give them.
Right.
And he says, they made us too smart, too quick, and too many. We are suffering for the mistakes they made, because when the end comes, all that will be left is us. And that's why they hate us. Because the humans aren't reproducing, well, they're not able to reproduce because of population pressure. But I also kind of think there's an idea that they're not replacing at the correct rate to survive.
Right.
Or they're just screwing up the world enough that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Inevitably, it's not going to be habitable for humans.
Or a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably both.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good line from him. And then, yeah, so I like his exit too.
With the electromagnet?
He rescues David and gets him back to the surface, and then like some police or some patrol with a electromagnet pulls him out of the helicopter, and he's able to hit submerge for David, so it seals up and David gets away.
Right.
But right before he leaves, you know, he says, if you ever become a real boy, remember me to the women. and then he says, I am, or I was. It's like he's asserting his mm-hmm. existence, right? Because he kind of knows.
If I think, therefore I am, kind of.
Yeah.
Thing.
So yeah.
What I got out of that. Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of the bots go pretty peacefully at the Flesh Fair. They're not programmed to fight for their lives.
Right.
And I feel like that's the way he goes out too. Right. He's like, well, I'm accepting my fate here, but I was, which I thought was a nice moment. So then, yeah, David sinks to the bottom of the harbor, down to Coney Island.
Yes.
where there is a blue ferry.
Yeah, deeply underwater.
And a Ferris wheel. Don't forget the Ferris wheel.
Yeah. Yes. And apparently the Ferris wheel collapses down on top of the submersible, which neither Seth nor I saw. Yes. Thank God James was there to tell us the truth.
Yep.
And
traps him there.
Yeah, but David starts praying to the ferry.
Yeah.
Please make me a real boy.
It's very Virgin Mary in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Blue fairy, please make me a boy.
Yeah.
Blue fairy. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes on and on and on. And then it kind of tails off.
Save me.
Yeah. And then there's voiceover.
Right. Ben Kingsley. Right.
Ben Kingsley, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Seth loves voiceover. Yeah.
It says that, you know, time passes and eventually David stops talking. Mm-hmm. And 2,000 years pass.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it just gets crazy.
Yes.
It gets weird.
Yeah, David gets defrosted by some beings.
Yes.
That
right.
A lot of people wonder what they are, right? Are they aliens? Are they something else? I had always taken that they were an advanced mecha.
At first, I thought they were aliens, because that's what they look. They look like to me like the gray aliens from, you know.
They definitely evoke that.
From
the Silly Putty people, right? Yeah. From Close Encounters, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and because it's a Spielberg movie, I think that's an easy association to make.
Yeah.
But they kind of look mechanical, right?
I think it becomes more apparent once they zoom in on them. Because once they zoom in on them, they look like skinny T-1000s.
Yeah, kind of.
And then they get the digital face going when, like, they're probing David.
Yeah.
Probing him just by touching rather than whoop.
Yes. Oh, like with Teddy. Teddy gets an anal probe. That happened earlier in the movie. At some point, Monica picked up Teddy and did like turned him on or off or something, but the switch was like butthole adjacent. So, and yeah, when you zoom in on them, they kind of have that like quantum computer look that you see in media.
Right.
They're marveling at the fact that he would have known live humans.
Right.
And these beings have been on Earth long enough that there aren't any others.
They're important to him from a anthropological perspective.
Right, right. Or robotological. I don't know. Androidological.
Androidological perspective. Yes.
Yeah. So then David wonders about, you know, who he is and what has happened, and he asks about his mom. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got his quest he has to fulfill. And they say that their technology has advanced so much that from, you know, from DNA from a person, they can recreate them from scratch. But due to certain things in the universe, that person only lasts one day.
Right.
And when they go to sleep, then they never wake up again.
Yeah. They've somehow like hacked the code of the universe to be able to do this.
Right. Yes. It's very Farewell to the Master.
Oh, yeah. From right? the sound, right? Yeah.
From the sound, yeah. You can completely recreate whatever it created that sound. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So from DNA, they can not only recreate the body, but the complete personality and character of a person.
Right.
But only for a day. Mm-hmm. Right. And guess what? Teddy, for all these years, has saved the lock of Monica's hair and mm-hmm. gives it to David, who gives it to the aliens.
Right.
And they try to remind him it's only for a day, mm-hmm. but David totally wants to do it. And so they have one day.
Yeah.
And the movie ends with Monica falling asleep forever. And David falling asleep and going to the place where dreams are.
Right. And that kind of matches with Professor Hobby had said, you know, you were the first of the mechas mm-hmm. to be able to dream. But he hadn't really accessed that until the very, very end.
Yes.
But evidently that potentiality was there, and that's what led to the
right.
development of the others, I assume. We don't get the whole descent of robot picture yeah. right. in the movie. But yeah, it's bleak. I don't always hate bleak. Lots of times I like a downer ending, but this one I find very affecting and very depressing. The idea that that's how we go out and there's nothing left of us.
But where was the super robot party?
Yeah. Yeah. Where is the consciousness upload, right? They're certainly sophisticated. And that's the thing, like there's an episode of the Big Bang Theory where Sheldon is kind of graphing the increase in computing power and his life expectancy and realizing, crap, we're going to get to the consciousness upload after I'm dead. So I've got to start eating Brussels sprouts. And you know, they milk that for comedy. But yes. You know, that's what happened, was humanity died out before we could get to that level of technology.
Right.
Yeah. So just left there to be studied by the gray looking mechas.
Yeah.
So
intelligent machines.
Yeah.
So well, and apparently in Ice Age it happened, because the way that they recover them is they cut down blocks of ice down to the submersible and they thaw mm-hmm. him and Teddy and
yeah.
Yeah, and there was a giant air chamber in there somehow, so that worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting because I think it's a very good movie. I'm not sure I love it.
I think it's a great movie with difficult subject matter and content.
And lots of times you're more vulnerable to that issue, right? Where there's lots of times where I'm like, that was a tough movie, but I loved it. This one, I just like, it just gets me down.
So what do you think of it from like a adaptation perspective?
Yeah, good question.
Did it hit what you wanted? Did it expand appropriately upon the source material?
Well, it didn't really pull on the threads in the story about kind of the loneliness of people. Right. That's what I kind of feel like the story is more about, and about what does it mean? It's, you know, Blade Runner adjacent in a lot of ways, right? What does it mean to be alive?
Yeah. What does it mean to love? What responsibilities will we have if we actually created life instead of things that only mimic life?
Yeah.
And is the difference in the way we treat them, does it say more about what they are or more about who we are?
Yeah. 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 And I like that the movie goes more that direction. What is our responsibility to them? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I do like that as an adaptation. I would say
it's more inspired by than adapted from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though the characters that are there, mm-hmm. a lot of similar motivations are there. A lot of
similar threads are there, right?
Yeah. At the end of the second short story, it talks about all the lights in the house going out, including Monica. And mm-hmm. it made me wonder, was she a simulacrum as well?
Mm.
But then in the third story, she comes back and she's not.
Okay.
Right.
And I mean, Henry's part of that three short story arc really kind of gets lost.
Yeah. And it does here too, right? Monica's much more important because he never calls Henry daddy.
Yeah.
He's bonded with her. And that's all.
He does in the book though, which I thought was interesting.
He does.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You kind of go from Monica's interactions with David to Henry's interactions with David in the third story.
Yeah. Mm. But the movie's very, very much about them, Monica and David, much more so than Henry.
Yeah.
It kind of illustrates his, I would say, lack of emotional depth. Mm-hmm. The fact that he thinks he can just fix his wife with getting this doll super toy.
Yep.
Well, you know, he's taking advantage of the synth bots as well, and maybe other humans while he's away.
Yeah. In the book, he definitely is.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Although he pulls the big Musk mistake, which is he promises they're going to build a colony on Mars.
Right.
Mm. And that tanks him in the company. Mm.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That was prophetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting, certainly an interesting movie. And like I love the discussion, like with you guys. And so it's the kind of movie that drives that kind of discussion. It's just not something that I want to watch every year.
Yeah. But I think I enjoyed it for that reason.
Yeah. Rank 'em?
Yeah. I mean, between bleak and depressing, what do you say?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the movie. Then the
book. You're going to go depressing?
Jude Law's
depressing
fantastic. Bleak? No, it's Jude Law. You got it for me.
Yeah.
All the dancing and the poetic and the sing-songy voices.
Oh, he'll get
and
it
going
for
back
you.
And forth between the different characters they actually played. Mm-hmm. You know, changing personalities as needed to satisfy the customer.
Yeah.
Customer satisfaction guaranteed.
Right. Yeah.
Well, unless he finds you and you've been crying.
True.
Right.
Touché.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because apparently his educational modules are so lacking, he doesn't know the difference between tears and blood.
Right. Yeah, that was...
Whatever.
Yep.
That was funny. I was like, ooh. Like, he did not register how screwed he was until very late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd think he needed really sensitive, you know, touch and you know, senses, right? He should be able to sense body temperature and arousal and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So you'd think maybe someone dead would.
She was freshly
set
dead.
Set off some. Yeah. She, only mostly dead.
Mostly.
Yes. No, deadish. All right, Colin, you're going bleak or depressing?
Boy, you know, if we're talking about the feels, I got to go movie.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of that from the short stories
that I
identified with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I think it was so smart to focus on that side of it. Of the, you know, what if a machine could love? So yeah, I go book movies. I mean, movie story.
Oh, Freudian slip.
So used to it, I guess. But yeah. So, anybody out there, let us know, what do you think of this movie? You know, were there any tidbits about it that we missed? Any stuff that you want to let us know about on my Patreon or on social media, you know, chat at us about that. Right. So, that wraps us for today. Colin and I are heading to Worldcon next week before this episode goes up. So I'm sure we'll see some folks there and say hello. And then in September, James and I are going on a long walk in England. And so we thought it was only appropriate that we maybe start a swing through some Stephen King with The Long Walk, which is also coming to theaters in September.
Yeah.
So as soon as we get back from England, just got to brush off the jet lag and go watch a movie.
Watch a movie.
Hopefully it lasts at least a week in the theater.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, if it doesn't, we have been talking about a number of other things.
Yeah.
There's the new recent adaptation of The War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
There's a radio play of RUR happening at WorldCon.
At the WorldCon. Yeah. Colin and I might do some short episodes. If you bring along the hand recorder, then maybe we go around and, you know, if we find somebody interesting to interview, we just sit down for 10 minutes and do some little shorts.
That'd be cool.
If I'm really ambitious, I'll, you know, record them on my phone, and do little videos, but we're more face for radio people. So
yes, we look better online.
Yes. Yeah.
In audio only.
not recording an episode, specifically at the podcast this year. So, but maybe we'll get some bonus content. No promises, but it could happen. Yeah. Stephen King, The Long Walk, and then we'll figure out what we're doing for October. We did have a couple of suggestions. Salem's Lot was one of them. So Sarah, whose sister is going to be at WorldCon, so I'll look forward to meeting Trish, said, I'm neutral on Carrie versus Salem's Lot, because those are two of the ones we talked about for October.
Oh,
she said, but I'd love it if y'all did The Dead Zone, you know, book versus David Cronenberg movie.
Yeah.
And
Cronenberg. Would we talk about the series as well?
Oh, with Anthony Michael Hall?
Yeah.
I thought that was the movie. Maybe I only know about the series.
No, the original movie with Christopher Walken.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, no, she does mention Christopher
and, Walken. And Martin Sheen, I think, plays the politician.
Okay. So yeah, we could decide to do one, any of those three. But we will figure out what we're doing for October sometime before October.
Good idea.
And And yeah, I mean, I know that every time David Eggernoff hears one of these, he's like, do Stir of Echoes and have me on to cover that. But that's Matheson. So I would like to do that at some point. But, you know, if we're doing The Long Walk and we're doing The Running Man, you know, it makes sense to just stick another King in there.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we end the year on Stephen King. Emmanuel put in a vote for comics movies. So, because we had talked about that.
Judge Dredd?
Superman stuff. Well, no, we were talking more about like Superman.
But, oh.
Dredd's so, rad, though.
Yes, I still do want to. At some point, we'll get to That'd do a series on graphic novel adaptations, and I want to do that. And Scott Pilgrim and maybe Men in Black. There's lots of fun stuff.
Watchmen.
Yeah, Watchmen. Like, I would want to talk about the series as well, because it's really good. I thought it was absolutely tremendous.
On Prime?
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it was on Max.
You could probably even get away with watching Batman. Return of the Dark Knight.
Yeah. Dark Knight Returns, yeah.
Or Dark Knight Returns. Yep. I don't know why I put that backwards.
I have a special San Diego Comic-Con 2016 box set of the Dark Knight Returns. And,
that's right.
And stuff with like action figures and stuff that I've just left in the box. Let it sit for 10 years and then see what I can sell it for.
It's harder to play with them when they're in the box.
It is, yeah. Yep. I think we're out. Yeah?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time. And until then, may the road rise up to meet you. And may the book always fall open to where you left off. Bye, ciao. Everybody.
Is the van okay for you?
Yeah, it's fine.
All parties involved, I
suppose. I'm too hot.
I got 20 towards us. We're good. Yeah.
I can feel it sort of going by me.
You can come visit if you need
to. I'm sitting here going, Blue Fairy, will you blow the air toward me? And I'm going to do it until my batteries run out.